My name is John Graff, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
And I'd like to thank Fernando for inviting me down here to participate in my sobriety. I love coming to this meeting. If you're new here, you're, you know, this is, which some of you, you know, took welcome chips and all of that. You're in a good group. We were just reminiscing the last time I was here with my sponsor. Guys had a little armed robbery action going on here, and the ghetto bird was out, and the sheriff department came in that back door where Michael's at and said nobody moved, and everybody just assumed the old position, you know. And then a bunch of guys said it was him, wasn't me, you know. So, I, you know, and I do it because of the fact that, you know, me and my friend Rich were talking tonight. If you're new here tonight, you know, you might think, oh, well, you know, they got this thing wired around here, you know, and nobody's immune to it, man. Nobody's immune to it. My friend Joe was a lot nicer guy than I'll ever be. And Joe was keeping some secrets. Me and Joe shared a, you know, he'd come out and we had the same sponsor. We shared the same sponsor. Joe, for 20 years, would come out here and stay with me, sleep on my couch, sleep in an extra room, whatever I had at the time. And stone cold sober, Joe was keeping some secrets around here. And so when people are telling you, you know, that secrets will kill, Joe was keeping some secrets, and he couldn't take his secrets anymore. He drove out in the field and he hung himself. And he had over 20 years of sobriety at that time. And I can remember that. That impacted my life that day. This is a guy that I considered, you know, a true friend. And I didn't know about his secrets, you know. And then you know, my nephew, I guess it's been 2 years now that Tim, he couldn't go to where his Uncle Johnny and his dad went, and he screwed up, and his mom is, you know, black belt Al-Anon, and she's like, you know, you're going into treatment, that's it, I've had enough of your crap. And this was on a Friday night, and Sunday they got the call that he went out in the driveway and put a gun in his mouth and blew his head off. So I don't, you know, whether I'm, and if you're new here tonight, I'm no authority. And after you get done, you'd say, you know, well, I wouldn't pay him for that talk anyway. But I'm no authority. This is just my experience. And that's the thing that's helped me stay here, is my experience. Because when people tell me their opinions of what I should be doing or how I should be doing it, I'm closed down, turned off, I'm gone. Yeah, I've heard sermons, opinions, yeah, court sentences, you know, like my homeboy there, Clinton. I used to run with a Clinton and a Clayton. They were twins, both of them, just rotten little bastards. And must be in the name. And but I don't want to forget that. Drunk or sober, it's not the fact that, oh, I had alcoholism. I have alcoholism. I have alcoholism, and it's alive whether I'm drinking or whether I'm sober. All I am is a few bad actions, and I'm up and out of here. I really am. And the bad thing about a guy like me is I can only be good for so long. I really can. I am. That's why I love this meeting. I was here with my friend Frank Jones, God rest his soul, and Frank did 10 minutes. There's a fight back here. It just warmed both me and my Frank's hearts. We're just like, oh, man, it felt so good to be at Paramount, right? You know? It's like, yeah. Because we've done the same shit at Ohio Street, you know? And so, welcome to AA, you know? But it was funny. I was talking to my friend Rich. I want to say that, you know, that I'm not immune to it.
Attaboy.
I was thirsty. I'm not immune to it because two weeks ago, I couldn't get it right. Nobody could do it right. Nothing. And I'm on a good run right now. I've got some things happening, very successful in my business. I got a daughter that I lost due to my drinking that I just walked out on. I abandoned back in my life. I spent first Christmas with her that I spent with her in 36 years. Met my granddaughter, met my son-in-law. You know, I got a little 8-year-old boy that's, you know, I mean, he's a chucklehead, but he's mine, you know, and I got a good woman that's got a bad disposition and a rotten attitude a lot of times, but she's stupid enough to love me. And then I got, you know, my other daughter that's a naval pilot. So I'm on a good run. But 2 weeks ago, Friday, I just couldn't shake it. Nobody was doing it right. It didn't fit. I was going against the grain. And I've been here for a minute. So I thought, well, I'll get out of myself. I have this kid that I'm sponsoring, and he's dying of ALS, which is another nasty, you know, illness. And it's like my job is to remind him that the worst thing that's going on for him is his alcoholism, you know, as he's just losing all of his bodily functions and everything else, and trying to, you know, keep his spirit up. And we went to this meeting. He goes to this other meeting on Friday night, so I figured, well, I'll go over there and surprise him, you know. And I went over there, and it was just, I saw more tits and ass at that meeting than I did at some strip clubs that I used to frequent. I was like, what are you thinking? I mean, really, where, did you just come off the pole or what? I mean, it was like, don't you know where you're at? I mean, it's like, this is a Super Bowl of sick. This is not something you want to be like, oh, he's my, you know, like I'm trolling for a husband up in here, you know? This is like, go to the Salvation Army or something, you know? But, and then I heard this guy speak, and it was just like, what was that? It was like a crack monster, you know? I was like, there was no one, and then it was dropping the F-bomb, and then I was like, oh my God. I felt like cutting my wrist. I really did. I was more pissed leaving that meeting than when I went in. And I was like, this is hideous. And I'm loading this guy up, you know, ask Rich. I mean, he's losing his hands, you know, he's losing his feet, he can't walk. And he was like, thank you so much for coming, you know. And I felt like this small. Like, I just couldn't shake it. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. And I'm leaving, and it's over in Hollywood, this meeting. And I just was like, what the hell is wrong with me? And I pull up to the stoplight. I look over. It's a red light. I look over. My hand to God. You're only going to see this in Hollywood. The Joker, not a Joker, the Joker, thank you. This ain't audience participation, by the way. Came walking out of Starbucks. Now, I'm not talking like, you know, this dude was made up and had a cane, dressed to the nines, and come up like... And I was like, oh, my God. Thank you, sweet baby Jesus. I was like, that's what it took. But I know people, my friend Joe, that would drive in a field and hang themselves, or my nephew that would shoot himself, or somebody else just even more pathetic than that, just pick up a drink because of that day. And that's the thing here. You can't, I cannot tell you the difference of my life from 7 o'clock in the morning or whenever I wake up to 10 o'clock that night of just putting my head down and was like, okay, I'm going to go to the next thing. Okay, I'm going to go. You know, even as bad as it is, as dark as it is, it ain't that bad. It ain't that bad. But the problem here is I can't remember that. There's a part in that book where it says self-knowledge avails us nothing. And that is the, it's a kiss of death for me. Because when I think I know something, I'm deadly. I am deadly. I came to you all. I didn't know what was going on. I shot out my life. Like I said, I was a little Catholic kid. I was a rotten Catholic kid. I had perfect examples of why not to drink, why not to do this stuff, and I just. You know, once I took a drink of alcohol, it was on. And it wasn't a big deal in our family. and I can remember just not fitting in. Just not, you know, not fitting in my own family. Not in the world. Just everybody was older than me. The only one that was closest to me was this brother that hated me. I mean, he shot me, he hung me, he stabbed me. Sorry, I'm not making this up. I mean, he hated me. And that's my brother, you know. I'm like, I don't even want to go outside, you know, because it's like, I don't have to leave the house, you know. Anyway, I drank, and I've heard it a bunch. It's like it didn't matter what was going on in my life. I just didn't care. I didn't care. It turned off that switch, and that was it. It wasn't that I got 10 foot tall and I got bulletproof or any of that. I didn't care. And what happened for me is I shot through school, you know. I this is the way I got out of high school. I had gotten expelled the previous year. My mom cut a deal for me to go back, and came. I was under lock and key my senior year, and I came to the end of that year, and I was a quarter credit shy from graduating. And they notified my mom, and they said, he's not going to graduate. And my mom, you know, left the principal's office in tears, and then my sister went in to plead my case, and they said, you know what, as she was leaving the principal's office, she said, you know what, he's going to have to come back a whole nother year for that quarter credit. And the principal, my hand to God, was like, you know what, I found that quarter credit. And that's how I got out of school. I love stealing. I make no bones about it. I loved stealing. I love stealing your stuff. I love stealing your cars, really. And I love seeing your faces as I drive by in your car. So we were stealing cars at this time. We were about 17, 18, and my buddy got busted. And I know the routine, you know, there's no honor. There was not with the bunch I was running with. There was no honor among thieves. And I knew, you know, I was going to go down, and everybody started going down. So I'm not an idiot. What happened was I grabbed a girlfriend and another friend, and we fled to the state of Texas. And the only thing that I knew at the state of Texas at that time was a drinking age was 18. And I was Texas bound. And we landed in Corpus Christi, Texas. The girlfriend got pregnant with that daughter that I just talked about earlier. And that friend and me got in a fight, and he moved out. And I'm in the cantina buying drinks on the house because I have a cantina that's giving me a running tab in it. Across the street's a liquor store. It's giving me a running tab in it. Down the street, I had hustled up this, you know, tell them I'll be home later. And this pipe yard that I had hustled up a job in. And what happened was I'm running on something that I didn't know that I was running on at the time, but I'm running on two things here. I'm running on this false pride, and I'm running on this self-centered fear. And the self-centered fear is I can't sit there and tell you. It's not like I'm going to sit there in a corner and suck my thumb. I'm doing like crazy outlandish crap to show you that I'm down. You know, Clinton talked about it. And that's what that was. And because secretly, I'm afraid on the inside, but I can't let anybody know that I'm afraid on the inside. But the other thing that's going on for me is I got this pride, this false pride, meaning that I may not know something, but I'll be damned if you ever figure that out, you know, and I'm not going to tell you that I don't know something. So what happened was I'm all excited about having this baby in my life, but I can't tell anybody that I'm scared to death because I don't know how to take care of a kid or what I'm going to do with this kid or how I'm going to pay for this kid or any of that. And because you're going to think I'm weak or I'm not a man or whatever it is, it ain't going to be anything positive. So that's how I'm living. And this old man was running the pool table that night, and I ended up rolling this old man I don't know what he had, his pension check, his Social Security, I don't know what he had, but I rolled this old man out of his money. I sent the girlfriend home to her mother, and I joined the service that night. And as a result of my service career, which lasted 11 months and 3 days, I can never step foot on a military installation the rest of my adult life. And, you know, I don't know about you, but in my drinking career, it was one of those things, because I saw buddies from the neighborhood and guys from the neighborhood get in trouble back in the day, and it wasn't like you're going to treatment. It was like you're going to prison or you're going to the military. So, you know, back then it was like, okay, I'm going to the military. And I was one of these guys where I thought it was going to work for me. It was because I'd see guys come back to the neighborhood. And they'd be all pressed and creased and have some money in their pocket, and they'd have a routine. So I thought that's what was going to happen to me. And that's not what happened to me. And what happened was that little girl was born to me, and I used to tell this part of my story where that little girl could be sitting in this room tonight, and I wouldn't know, because that's the price that I paid for alcohol, you know. It's I threw that into the ring, and I was so excited. I can't tell you how excited I was. And the weird thing is about that is I just chucked it aside. I just chucked it aside like so many things in my life. It was just like, okay, well, on to the next thing. And I hooked up with another lady that had two boys already born to her, and I ran this family through hell. And we did this dance of death for 8 more years. And what happened at the end of my drinking was they were two boys, and they started to drink and use. So I'm a scumbag at best. You know, at the end of my drinking, I'm sending them to school to sell dope for me. I'm ripping them off. They're ripping me off. We're one big happy family. And we've moved from the city to the country to deeper in the country to back into the city. And it's a mess. It's a mess. And I'm about 110 pounds. I'm yellowish green. I got open sores all over my body. And I had no inkling of, like, coming to AA or any of that. And me and the little woman got into it one more night, and I ended up throwing some things in a little black bag, and I ended up walking out. And do what all guys of my caliber do about 2 a.m. I called Mom Collect just to check in, see what she's up to. And poor woman. And she had 4 kids, and all of them just are rotten, rotten, rotten. She had double knee replacements for praying for us, you know. And she sent this plane ticket. I told her I just left Judy and the boys, and I wanted to come home. And what happened was I had heard through the grapevine that brother that hated me had gotten sober in something called A&A. And my mom, for the first time in her life, was like, you know what, Johnny? Now, here's what kind of scumbag's helping you put your life together tonight that you're listening to, that you're, like, putting your, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm putting my money on this guy tonight, you know, for a little gem to stay sober to midnight, you know? My mom had lost a kid before me and was, like, severely depressed. And back then they told her, you know, get pregnant again. So her and my dad were, like, in and out. It was a catastrophe, right? But eventually, here comes me, right? And so my mom was so sleep deprived that when I was a baby, she had me on the changing table, and she turned around for a minute, and I kicked off of the table, and I fell on the ground, and I cracked my head and split my head open and fractured my skull, almost died. They run me to the hospital. They saved me, obviously. And but I found that out, and I used that against my mom for years. Like, I probably would have been something if you wouldn't have dropped me, you know. I probably wouldn't have all these mental conditions if you know. Like, they've been taking me to see somebody ever since I was in, like, third grade, you know, and observing me and, like, you know. That's what kind of scumbag is, you know, putting your life together tonight. And thanks a lot, Fernando. And my mom, for the first time in her life, I could always work her. I could always shoot the angle with her. I'm an angle shooter. I'm a loophole finder. And, you know, for the first time in her life, my mom said, you know what, Johnny? She says, I'll send you this ticket. She says, but I'm not going to come and bail you out of jail. I'm not going to put money on the books for you. I'm not going to pay for your lawyers. I'm not going to allow you to wreck my car. I'm not going to allow you to ruin my life anymore, Johnny. And I thought, well, that was kind of harsh, but, you know, I'm like, whatever, I got my ticket, you know. And I had asked her to bring my brother and that maybe I would go into treatment. Now, my brother was, he was about 5 years sober at the time, and he was in his evangelical stage of sobriety. And so he was proceeding to tell me where I was going to go and what I was going to do and what I was going to do once I got there and how much fun I was going to have when I got there. And so he took a breath, and we're going down I-70, and so I proceeded to tell my brother where he could go and where he could put it and how much fun he was going to have once he put it there. And now my little fat blue-haired mother is sitting in the back with the rosary beads smoking, because now Captain Serenity and I are pulling over on I-70, and we're going to go to Fist City. And I'm in town, hand to God, I'm in town 5 minutes, you know. And my mom from the back seat. I'll never forget this. She said, Johnny, why don't you go talk to these people? And if you ain't got a problem, you ain't got to do nothing about it. Now, I already told you I'm a shortcut finder, a loophole finder. You know, if it takes you 2 weeks to do something, 2 years to do something, you're stupid. This is going to take me a weekend, you know? Oh, you got a college degree? Give me a minute, you know? I got a mimeograph, you know, I got a copy machine, whatever, you know? It doesn't, I'll have a degree. I'll have a degree by the time this meeting's over, you know? Where'd you go to school? You know, it doesn't, and I don't get that. It's like, that's why I love stealing. It's like, I love stealing. As my friend, again, Frank Jones used to say, I keep my money and I get what I'm after. I'm a double winner, you know? It's like, I get that connection. But the only problem is I had to get sober to figure out. My mom told me for years, she said, Johnny, you're the only one you're screwing. You're the only one you're getting over on. You're the only one that you're doing this to yourself. Because you're going to go up, you're going to grow up, and you ain't going to have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And I'm like, you know, when you're 26 years old and you're shot out and you're yellowish green, you got open sores all over your body and you ain't got no friendly direction to go. It's like, maybe she was right, you know? I mean, it's like, because I wasn't an alcoholic when I got here. I wasn't. Now, I don't know how much more convincing I would need, but it was the descriptions and the, you know, your all's experiences that set the hook for me. Because there is no definition. There's a room full of different people tonight. Nobody's story is the same. But it's this person's story and that person's story. And it's the thing to where once I hear it, that heart of hearts of me, I can't shake it. I can't deny it. I can't lie about it. I'm screwed. I belong. You know, it's like I fit finally. I'm not so unique. I'm not so dirty. I'm not whatever it is, whatever label, facade, whatever it is, I'm not that guy. I'm not. And I had a ton of excuses. Me and my wife, I always tell this part, me and my wife will get in a fight. My wife will look at me. People are thinking I'm trying to be funny. I'm not. I'm really not. She'll say, if you would just say you're sorry, we wouldn't be arguing. If I would say I was sorry, I'd have to think I was wrong to say I was sorry. I never think I'm wrong. Never. I don't care if you got pictures today. I'm not wrong. It's whatever it is. It isn't me. There's something broken in me that I'm not wrong. I ended up... I got sober in this place, and I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy talked one day in that stupid thing called group, and I identified. And it was one of those things where I couldn't, like I just said, I couldn't shake it. I couldn't deny it. And what happened is I left that place. And I wasn't happy. I didn't have a good attitude. I had a rotten attitude. I went back. I was 27 years old when I had gotten here and stayed sober in that halfway house that they sent me to. And I went back home. I was living with Mom, you know. That'll make you feel like a champ. And, you know, I'm 27 years old, and I'm shot out, and I'm starting over. And the only guy that in that town, because I'm from a little one-dog town in the Midwest, the only guy that would give me a job was like my dad. And he made no bones about it, because I had burned, between me and my brother, we had burned our family's name in that town. And he made no bones about it. He said, you screw up, or if I have one tool missing out of this place, your ass is gone. And he gave me this job off of that alone. And he worked me like a rented mule. And I did that job, and I ended up like going to these meetings. I had a, you know, mean-hearted sponsor. He didn't really care how I felt or what I thought about anything. And I got a little, you know, I started putting my life back together. And at 3 years sober, he got mad at AA, and he up and quit AA. And I was kind of twisting in the wind. I had all these things back in my life that I thought were going to make me happy. None of them were making me happy. I have a little girl born to me at that time, and she was like a couple years old at that time, and I'm crazy. As my sponsor puts it, I was stark raving sober, and I was as in much pain at 3 years sober, like I described last two Fridays ago. I was as in much pain then without an answer. And I thought eating a bullet at that time, because I'd been through the steps. I'd had this sponsor. I was involved in AA. But it was that image and all of that crap that I was still hanging on to, all those little chicken shit secrets and all that crap that I... Because I didn't know about the whole transformation. I didn't know, I didn't get that part. What happened was I had become friends with a lady named Karen Garrison, and I called Karen up and I said, I need Clancy's number. I called him up, and I started taking direction from this man 2,000 miles away. I had to write him once a week. I had to call him. I could call him any time, but I had a certain day to call him. And the magic that started to happen for me in that whole deal was that I learned to tell on myself. And that's a whole nother deal, man, because I don't tell on myself. And I had to start becoming accountable to somebody else about everything. And there was something, some little lady said it to me the other night in a meeting, when that was, there's magic in that writing. And there was some transformation that was going on in that writing, to where I could put that stuff down on paper, and it was so pressing and such a problem on Sunday night when I wrote that letter. But by Wednesday when I would call him, I'd forget the hell what was in that letter. So what happened was, me and my then wife came out here to go to his 35th year birthday party, and I was 5 years sober. I was sitting at Ohio Street on a Tuesday night, and I had the thought and the feeling I was smoking then, and they have this painting at the back of the podium. I was looking at this painting, and I had the thought and the feeling come over me that anything was possible here. And I was 5 years sober. I was 5 years sober, and I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous, as, you know, as best as I could with the direction that I had and what I was committing myself to. I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I told my wife at the time, I said, I'm going back, because where I got sober, it wasn't a big thing about sponsorship. It wasn't a big thing about unity. It wasn't a big thing. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that isn't the same as in Southern California. So we sold everything we owned, and we loaded up 2 4x8 trailers, and we drove out here to be part of Pacific Group. And I would love to sit here and tell you that every meal I've eaten was a banquet and that I have little birds land on my shoulder in the morning and whisper scripture in my ear and, you know, and that I walk on the sunny side of the street every day. But, you know, I already told you I had to see the Joker the other night coming out of Starbucks, for Christ's sake, you know. That was my spiritual breakthrough. And I haven't, and I'm probably the best example of that. You could do everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous, but two things, and that is, to me, actually it's three things. The three things that I don't do is I don't keep a secret from my sponsor, point blank. I hope he doesn't like me, you know? It's like, I just hope he doesn't, you know, because I'm telling him. I'm telling him what's going on. The other thing is I don't run away. I don't run away. I screw up. I make a lot of mistakes, but I ain't running away. The third thing that I don't do is I don't drink. I don't drink. And I do whatever it takes not to do that. That little girl that moved across country with us is now a naval pilot, you know, and that's, it seems like a short stint from, you know, driving across country, you know, 5 minutes, you know, of whatever that is. But it was a long road, and she's getting ready to deploy and go fly the northern Iraqi border. And I'm proud as punch, but I'm scared to death, you know, scared to death. And you know, and it's, you know, I know somebody will come up tonight, oh, it's fine, you know. Hey, you, yeah, all right. Yeah, when you get cancer, it's going to be fine too, you know. It was probably just a little bump, you know. You know, that's the thing, I don't speak out of turn. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm giving some, I don't have cancer. I don't know. I go see a doctor. That's what I would tell you, you know? I don't know. I can't, I'm watching a guy die now of stage 4 liver cancer. You know, it's hideous. He calls me up, you know, he's, you got any words of advice? I'm like, I'm looking for words of advice from you. You know, I got nothing. I mean, what could I say? His days are numbered, you know, but I'm proud as punch of that little girl, of what she's done. She's flying up, you know, the Seahawk for the United States Navy. It's equivalent to the Blackhawk. She looked at me and she says, I could either blow you up or I extract you, Dad. You know, I'm like, that's my girl. There you go. And we don't have, I mean, she was being trained by Marine drill sergeants. They all had to come and meet me because she has this sick sense of humor that, like, they're yelling and grilling them, and she's over there laughing. And they're like, what the hell's the matter with you, Graf? And she would, like, you don't know where I come from. And they're like, what the hell you mean where you come from? Where do you come from? She goes, you don't know my dad. You're going to have to come stronger than that, you know? And just infuriate these people. So they all had to meet me at graduation. And here I come, you know, bopping in. I'm not even supposed to be on base. And she has to tell them that. You know, I have to get a clearance to get on base. I mean, she was embarrassed, you know? She's like, yeah, about my dad. He's not supposed to be on base, you know? Well, what did he have, a bad conduct? Yeah. He was defrauding the federal government. He was running drugs. Yeah. I got this little boy that's never seen me and his mom drunk, you know? And I didn't want another kid. I went through a divorce with my daughter's mother that went out, and that's a whole nother story. And I was done with that crap. I just was like, you know, I was going to be like an AA pimp, you know? I was going to cut a weak one from the herd here and there, you know? And like, I'm not doing this crap anymore, you know? I got tangled up with this girl. I love you. I hate you. You hang up. No, you hang up, you know? And I have conditions. I have a way. I have a map of my life. I'm kind of OCD about crap. Now, you wouldn't know it, but it's like, you know, it's like I know what I want, and it ain't no kids, you know. I'm 55 years old, you know. They're like, oh, you out with your grandson? No, he's my son, asshole, you know. What's up? Where's your wife? I'll impregnate her, you know. But he is like, you know, all of that crap that I thought that I knew that I wanted, that I thought I had figured out, it was like, you know, I would have missed it. I would have missed it. And that daughter that I gave up during drinking, here's the craziest part of the story of all, man. Last year, I get a call from my daughter, that Navy pilot, and she's like, see, I don't hide anything from my kids. My kids, she's always known about my other daughter, and she's always wanted to meet my other daughter. But now, if you're new here tonight, this is, everything else is fluff, but this last portion I would hope you would pay attention to, because I almost died in these rooms trying to find somebody, you know, if I would have had a questionnaire like, oh, have you been to jail? Okay, you're good. All right, have you, you like stealing cars? Okay, you're good. Are you a scumbag? And like, you know, okay, you're good. All right, yeah. You know, I'd have a questionnaire, and I was so stupid about getting somebody that when my best thinking at 3 years sober thought, well, I'm just going to eat a bullet, that's the best I could do, I made a deal when I called Clancy up that whatever this guy tells me to do, I'm going to do, because this is where I'm at. This is the best I could do. So whatever he's going to tell me to do can't end me up over here. And it hasn't. So I figured, okay, I'll do whatever the hell he tells me to do. So every sponsor I've had this problem with this daughter of mine that when I talk about my amends and, you know, go over a fifth step with him or what have you, I always feel guilty about abandoning this daughter. It's always a bad part for me. It eats my lunch around holidays. It eats my lunch around her birthday. I still know all of this. I'm not somebody, oh, I had a black, oh, I don't remember. No, I remember everything. That's the problem with me. So every sponsor I've had three. First one killed himself. Second one got pissed at AA. Third one's Clancy. So everyone I've had, when I've talked to him about this daughter of mine, he said, leave her alone. She's probably been adopted. She's probably been raised by somebody else. And just because you took chicken shit actions and you feel bad about it now, you want to go make yourself feel good and go make amends to her and ruin her life. Leave her alone. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in God's time. Everyone has said that. None of them has had this experience. None of them. So, 5/24 of 16 last year, that daughter, that naval pilot, calls me up and says to me, hey, are you sitting down? And I said, oh, crap, what? You know? And she goes, I just got off the phone with Jess. I go, Jess who? She goes, your other daughter, Jessica. And I said, you what? And she goes, I just got off the phone with Jessica. She said, She took a DNA test on Ancestry.com. My daughter took a DNA test on Ancestry.com. Grandma, mom, nobody was telling her how to spell my last name, for good reason. Now she's put together with a graph that now she knows how to spell the last name. She gets on that stupid thing called Facebook, which I hate. She searches up my daughter. She searches up my wife. She searches up my two nieces and searches up my brother. And sends them a message. And the message is simple as this. It says, I don't want anything. I'm not looking for any drama. I'm not looking for any money. I'm very successful. I've been married for years. I have a son. I have a daughter and a husband. I'm just looking for some information about my dad. And she goes, I realize I'm probably a secret. And again, I don't want any drama. Ancestry.com says we may be first cousins. My daughter sends her back the message and, you know, her number, and they talk. And she goes, I've known about you my whole life. She says, he's been sober. He's been active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, we're not cousins. We're sisters. And by the way, you have a little brother. And it's been eating his lunch for years. 5/24/16, I talked to my daughter for the first time. Father's Day of last year, my wife, my daughter, my son got me a ticket to fly to North Carolina where she was living with her family. I got to meet my daughter, my granddaughter, my son-in-law for the first time. This Christmas, they came out here, and we all went down to Palm Desert, stayed out here for 2 weeks, and I got the chance to, like, spoil them rotten. She came back a couple weeks later because of work, and her boss wanted to meet me. You know, I mean, I can't tell you that that's going to happen for you, but I don't know of any other place that that happens other than here. There's a part in that book. It's called There Is a Solution. I don't know about any of you all, but I didn't have a solution when I was out there. And any solution I had was usually worse than the problem that I was in at the time. If you're new here tonight, I hope you can surrender to this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't mistake it. There's no normal thing that's going to make you normal. There's only a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that will make it possible that you don't have to pick up or blow your brains out one day at a time. Thanks.